Time now for an update from the Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
Let's head over to the Zoom line where we have Mr. Joe Sinnott on the line. He is the host of the Energy Detox podcast, as well as the CEO of Whiting Partners. Whiting Partners, of course, very busy this time of year. Not only does Joe Sinnott have annual meetings he has to prep CEOs for and board members and HR departments, but also it's annual meetings conference time. So Joe Sinnott is asked many times to participate in conferences, to share his expertise and his knowledge. And lo and behold, this week, it was either last night or the night before, because we want to give you some latest breaking news. Mr. Joe Sinnott was attended the Shale Insights conference out in the Marcellus Utica Appalachia Shale play. And that's a big deal out there. How you doing, Joe?
Doing all right, Jason, although I want to clarify here. I don't think I was asked to participate this past week in Shale Insight, but I was happily there as an attendee and happy to contribute. So whether they wanted me there or not, I was there. I took a lot away from it, and happy to talk a little bit more about what I saw and heard and felt there at Shale Insight this year.
Well, thank you for the clarification. I get so confused because I know sometimes you're moderating panels, other times you're showing up to, you know, gain some knowledge. Sometimes you might just, do you go to networking events very, very much? Those, because this Shale Insights, that was not like, hey, we'll meet you at the club at 5 o'clock and we'll have drinks together and take social media pics. Do you attend many of those? I don't see that much.
Not as much as I used to. And when I say used to, I mean, I'm talking, you know, only about a year and a half, 2 years ago, sort of as we came out of COVID. Prior to that, I'll admit, in my former life, when I had a more traditional role in oil and gas, you know, working for an operator there, I didn't go to many because, you know, sort of in our bubble and we did our thing. It was this, this mindset that, hey, look, you know, we got plenty going on. I was fortunate enough to work for a company that became the biggest natural gas producer in the United States. So there was this sense sometimes that, hey, you know what? We're good. We don't need to be out there. But I'll tell you what, now that I'm on the other side of the equation, you know, from a service provider standpoint, you know, I see not just the value for it myself and fellow service providers networking, but, you know, you really see what operators get out of these conversations. You know, there is definitely a free flow of ideas and conversation, especially when the drinks are free flowing. So I'll tell you what, Jason, I get a lot of value. And I tell you what, for events like the one I was just at, it's a nice combination of the, hey, meet you at the bar at 5 o'clock, plus, you know, the ingestion and the participation in real, practical, headline grabbing topics.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, beautiful marriage up there in Erie this week.
The one thing I noticed with the events, and I've been tracking events for 20 years, and I've written articles about conference trends and number of different things for business publications in the past. And the one thing I did notice was that a lot of the events like the Shale Insights and some of the other ones, and I'm just using them as an example because you said there was kind of a happy hour type thing there as well as you were there. Conferences started doing that. They started adding that, you know, 4 o'clock, you know, maybe it's sometimes even they have a 2-drink maximum. A lot of times I've been to conferences where they're like, hey, this is just for socializing and networking. This is not a get drunk on your company's dime type of a thing. So that's when I started seeing that a lot of those, you know, they would always have, it seemed like one or two a week of these weeknight socials. And then what I found is a lot of the people became family households and they just didn't have the time to go to those weekday socials. And so the conferences kind of filled in that void a little bit to where you could relax and loosen up a little bit, because having a conversation with somebody in the hallway before you go to the next breakout session versus, you know what, I'm holding a glass of wine, holding a Coke, holding a club soda with maybe a lime in there because I don't drink, but I'm hanging out in a more loose atmosphere. You have a totally different conversation, don't you, Joe?
You do. Yeah. I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. It's that relaxed atmosphere where it's a human conversation. It's so far from transactional and it makes it enjoyable. And again, logistically, I'll admit, you know, yeah, it's difficult to try to have a conversation. Heck, I'll admit that the one time I tried to balance a drink and food and have a conversation, there may have even been a slight accident. I'm not ashamed to admit that, but it also reinforced my desire to, be mindful of simplifying logistics when you can. And when you can go up to Erie and spend two nights there in an environment where it's really all, you know, it's all in one spot, and you have that combination, as you said, of casual networking, you know, running into people. It's not this massive conference, but it's certainly big enough to again, walk away with, no pun intended, plenty of insights that help you do your job more effectively. Again, regardless of what end of the spectrum you're on in terms of, again, operator, service professional, whatever it is, you're going to walk away with some value. And, you know, I'm happy to report that that's what I did. Yet again, three years running for me up in Erie. This conference used to take place down here in Pittsburgh, and they've had it in other locations as well. But last 3 years has been up in Northwest PA, and it's a great setting, a great format to be a part of.
Well, let's get the boots on the ground report from your live experience at the Shale Insights Conference in Erie, Pennsylvania. Is that right?
Yeah, Erie, they have a big convention center there on the bayfront. And it's a
good for Erie. Good for Erie getting that in. I have not heard the word Erie, Pennsylvania. I had to remember if it was in Ohio or Pennsylvania for a second, because it's been a long time. And I did five magazines in Pennsylvania, so I knew the state pretty well. What if somebody's never been to the Shale Insights Conference before? What can somebody expect? Give us the context. Give us the lowdown a little bit. You know, do they talk about things beyond shale? You know, do they talk about traditional as well? What kind of attendance was there? You know, was there a keynote? Just give us kind of a brief overview, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. So as far as expectations, if you're going to Shale Insight, you can expect to hear from the big boys, so to speak. So I don't remember the percentage, but the membership of MSC represents an insane amount of molecules, essentially, that come out of the Marcellus. And again, I don't want to make up numbers, but I mean, it's approaching 100% of the Marcellus molecules that are flowing out of the ground flow through or are produced by member companies. So you're going to hear from the leaders within these companies, because they're a part of the Marcellus Shale Coalition on a regular basis and regular meetings, not just at, you know, their annual conference that's open to the public. So you're going to hear from the big boys, and we heard a lot of that. So updates on, you know, what the biggest players, the EQTs of the world, the Senecas of the world, the Chesapeakes of the world, you know, what they're doing to, you know, innovate and, you know, to keep the gas flowing and to not just rest on their laurels, but to continue operating more effectively, efficiently, in an environmentally friendly way. And to your point, Jason, to not just talk about natural gas development and getting it out of the ground, but also what's on the horizon when it comes to, you know, carbon capture and storage and, you know, the potential for a hydrogen hub. So yes, we definitely find ourselves talking about a lot more than just, you know, the sort of the ho-hum production of natural gas from, it's horrible to say ho-hum production of natural gas from the Marcellus, given how transformative and relatively new it is. But boy, oh boy, I mean, you're going to hear about the, you know, the latest and greatest developments, not just stale company updates that you can get from a, you know, from an investor presentation.
One of the things I've noticed is that the oil and gas companies are becoming energy companies. This was something that I've been talking about at conferences since 2015 and 16. Actually, it was the first time I started uttering the prediction that you're going to see oil companies start dropping the word oil and crude and these types of things. We never did at the Crude Life because, you know, we are very understanding that oil and gas is not a major a pollutant like they're making it out to be. It's contributing, but I'm contributing as a human. That tree is contributing over there. I believe that all energy has a purpose, and as long as you have ethical, responsible leadership as opposed to opportunist managers, because right now there's a lot of people in leadership, and this goes well outside of oil and gas. They're supposed to be a leader, but really they're just managing. And leaders should not be managers, because you go behind eventually. It's kind of like leaving your money in the bank. Eventually, inflation's gonna knock you out if you don't make any moves. So where I'm going with this, Joe, is two parts. Number one, I believe the biggest problem right now in corporate America is there are too many managers and not enough leaders. And number two, the oil and gas industry, I don't think is ever going to go away. I believe that it is going to be a part of our future no matter what. And that's why the Crude Life's never changed our name before. But anyway, your comment on leadership versus management. And if you want to chime in on, you know, any sort of whether crude oil is going to go away in the next 20 years or not, it's up to you. But I don't think it's going to.
Yeah, well, on the leadership versus management front, again, it's a common thread of conversation, if not cliched thread of conversation, that yes, you know, not all managers are leaders, of course. But I think you said something in there that you didn't use this word, but I heard it, because you can't be in the energy industry, not here, can't be in the world these days, not here, the world, sustainability, right? Sustainability. And it's not sustainable to have managers who, you know, can check all the boxes and, you know, do everything, you know, quote, right from a management standpoint and follow standard procedures when it comes to communication and decision making. And, you know, they can read all kinds of books, whether they're leadership books or management books, but it's not sustainable because things are constantly changing, right, Jason? And, you know, yeah, you need people that can think big. And I guess tying that back to your other comment, you know, is, you know, oil and gas, is it ever going away? You know, the answer is no, but the problem is too many folks in our industry, and this is me maybe getting on my soapbox, they're too quick to lead with that headline. Hey, oil and gas isn't going anywhere. You need us. And it's true. And I think, you know, even those who might be antagonistic to our industry know it's true. But when you're leading with that headline, you know, that conversation is going to be very different from one where you know, maybe eventually get to that point, but you start with the fact that, hey, look, we're all looking for the same thing, right? We're all looking to prosper. We're all looking to maximize the potential of ourselves as individuals, of our families, of our communities, of our state, of our country. And that includes natural resources, taking full advantage of them. So we're going to work together towards those bigger goals that we all share. And oh, by the way, you know, oil and gas is going to continue being a part of that equation because of it's just, you know, physics and math and science, right? That's, you know, that is the basis for a fruitful conversation. What I see too often, and this goes back to, you know, inside companies, you know, too often leaders or quasi leaders or certainly managers, they rely on stale talking points, right? They can't go beyond those standard cliche, in some cases nauseating approaches. And that's not how you move things forward, Jason. That's not sustainable. So when I'm working with individuals within companies, so much of our time is spent on communication and making sure that communication is differentiated. It's, you know, enthusiastic. It's energizing and isn't just a, you know, bunch of, you know, running through some sort of standard script. Because that's not leadership, Jason.
Man, I got to tell you, I was going to jump in a second ago, because when I'm live on the radio, you know, we have basically 5 and 8 minute blocks. And so we kind of jump in. And like I always tell Steve Bakken when we're on the radio, we call it a monkey with a seltzer bottle. Sometimes you just got to have a red light and a monkey with a seltzer bottle to stop the flow and have a teachable moment. And you said something where I wanted to do that, but because it's a podcast and we're going to put it on the radio later, we can let our ideas flesh out a little bit, which is one of the big advantages of a podcast. Now, you said, we're not going anyway, but you need us, right? That's, I'm paraphrasing, but that actually might have been verbatim. So, you know, oil and gas isn't going away, but you need us. And this is where I actually would butt heads with oil and gas leadership, because I would start the sentence with, oil and gas isn't going anywhere. How can we all work together? And that is a big difference between you need us. And that never registered until you said that, because one of the things I have noticed through the years is the oil and gas industry called the shots. They actually have departments called government affairs, for crying out loud. I mean, that they're a part of the U.S. government. They're a private, and they're private corporations, but they actually have a department that only deals with the government. I mean, that's, Joe, there's not a lot of other companies like that. Okay. So with the oil and gas industry, they had this entitlement and this power for so long that I didn't, I underestimated the pushback. I underestimated the management. I underestimated the, we don't want things to change, all the way to where, when, you know, some people were coming in, and I wasn't the only one, Joe. You, I would put you in this camp as somebody who's trying to bridge gaps as well, and bridge, you know, moderate hate and try to be a peacekeeper and that sort of things. I've found from industry, a lot of times there's even pushback for the peacekeepers. And I think a lot of it has to do with, because they did call the shots for so long and the world did rely on oil a little bit. It is hard to give up that, that role, that power, whatever you might say. And I think a lot of people, that's lost on them, if that makes sense, Joe.
Yeah, I'll bring it back to conversations in Erie, because there is a sizable portion of the crowd there that is in the world of government affairs and community affairs, which is, you know, maybe a softer version, but, you know, still same idea, right? It's, you know, getting the facts out there.
Government affairs, federal, community.
Well, well, whoever it is. Well, that's it. But I mean, you know, it's all connected, obviously. Yes. You know, but to your point, Matt, in Erie and the people that are attending Shell Insight, I can assure you, you know, none of those people take for granted any relationships that our industry may or may not have with, you know, those in power, in government positions, in positions of, you know, those who can influence regulatory matters, because it's not easy in this part of the world. It is not easy. You know, sure, oil industry started here in Pennsylvania, what, 160 years ago, but that doesn't mean that we're not continuing to, and again, you don't want to use the word fight, but, you know, it takes a lot of energy to make sure that the narrative is fair and factual. And quite frankly, there's, you know, obviously a lot of external momentum heading against the industry. So I just want to make it clear that, you know, I don't, there's nobody that I encountered at Shell Insight that takes for granted any sort of any sort of gains that we may make with government officials, because they're also constantly changing, right? And mm-hmm. you know there's billions of dollars. And again, I just said you know, let's be careful about talking points, but you know, one talking point that is true is that there are billions of dollars, you know, on the side of the equation that is against what oil and gas does. And those billions of dollars are being used to influence people, again, from the community level all the way up to the highest rungs of, you know, government. And, you know, they don't call themselves government affairs people that are taking those billions of dollars. It, you know, it's not transparent, right? It's typically more behind the scenes. And, you know, that's the type of battle that people in our industry are constantly facing. So yes, is there an element of, I think you said, peacekeeping that is necessary? Sure. But at the same time, you know, it's amazing that people who have been in the world of government affairs in our industry, you know, don't just throw their hands up at some point and give up and say, you know, I'd rather just be a, what did you say earlier, a monkey with a seltzer bottle, and just, you know, just get in the faces of people and say, would you just stop with the nonsense and the lies? You know, for people to keep it together and not do that, I'll tell you what, you know, they, you know, talk about unsung heroes in our industry. As an engineer, you know, a lot of time, you know, people like to point to engineers in our industry and innovation, but, you know, if you can't, you know, manage the conversations with those in a position of influence, and again, that being predominantly government affairs folks or government officials, I should say, and regulatory bodies, boy, oh boy, you know, our industry would not be able to, you know, to do what it has done for our nation, as it has. So anyway, I guess
I'm following you. In fact, as you were speaking, I was kind of going through an example in my head of where what we're going through is a paradigm shift. And when I was a publisher, that's what I came from, publishing. I also was on the radio at the same time I was in publishing, but I'm a trained journalist and communicator, and one was an editor for 20 years, a publisher for 20 years. And I've survived 7 recessions. I went bankrupt in one back in 2009 when all the newspapers ended up going bankrupt within the next 3 years. So that was a paradigm shift. We went from print to the internet. And by the way, the government supported Facebook, Google, Yahoo, and other social platforms during that time. Silicon Valley got a lot of money during that time. because, and then what ended up happening was, is everybody was ended up getting their information for free online. So everybody on Facebook would just share the newspaper story, and then the newspaper, it was a slow bleed. So that ended up happening to the radio, and I saw that with radio. And when I got brought into the radio station, Joe, I got brought in for a number of reasons. I got brought in to set up their intern program, their news intern program. I got brought in to set up their podcasting. I got brought in to bring the news to the internet. Before me at KFGO, they were not on the internet. So part of my role as a producer was to get the news team, who hadn't done anything new in 45 years, on the internet. And that was a 3-year battle. And I can tell you what those meetings were like with those 25-year-old kids fresh out of school. They could not understand why the 50-plus-year-olds that are working the newsroom every day, showing up between 3 and 5 o'clock in the morning, doing their grind, using all capital letters, printing out things, markers. I mean, it was, Joe, it was like an exhibit from the Smithsonian. I mean, we're talking cassette tapes, okay? That was a 3-year battle. But they made money, so the ownership didn't want to change a darn thing. But guess what? The people the ownership hired wanted me to change those people. So we would joke about, like, there's got to be hidden cameras, and the owner of the place is just laughing because he's got one staff doing one thing, and he's got the other staff doing the other thing, and he knows he doesn't care as long as he makes money, but he knows things need to change. What I'm getting at, Joe, is that everybody then that was under the age of 40 knew that you had to put the news on the internet. But everybody that was over 40 didn't see where the money was coming from. So they resisted because all they saw was they were going to get out of a job soon. So that's what I think is happening in oil and gas right now, is that there's this push happening where if you go to any coffee shop, they're going to say, we got to get rid of oil and gas and we all got to get electric cars. They don't even understand the weight of the battery of a car, of a semi. Like, if you have 10 semis with EV batteries in a town, that is more power than the entire grid of the town. Like, that's how behind we are on EV batteries still. But the average person doesn't understand that. So I think that's a lot of what's going on right now. The oil and gas industry is going through this paradigm shift that they've never seen before. And so the leadership, who used to be just great leaders, they're in uncharted waters. So they might lead, then they might manage, then they might lead, then they might manage. They're kind of uncertain what to do. I'm rambling now, Joe, but I had an example in there about the paradigm shift, and I know you're an intelligent man. So let's relate that to the oil and gas industry with this paradigm shift. How can owners navigate through this paradigm shift that the newspaper industry saw, that the radio industry saw, with the internet coming in, took them out. And there was a lot of people that resisted it. And now those people, they're all over the internet. So anyway, I hand the baton to you, sir.
Yeah, well, okay. So yeah, a lot there. You know, yes. You talk about a paradigm shift. One answer to your question there is leaders need to recognize when their response is, I'm going to say too strong, but you know, it is a big shift from years ago when our industry didn't do much because we didn't have to again, tout the merits of oil and gas. And now sometimes I see, and again, this is, you know, this is me as an observer, not as, you know, any representative of any company or of the Marcellus Shale Coalition or anything, but there can be a tendency to go so far the other direction. And again, like we talked about earlier, be, you know, kind of poking the other side in the eye and saying, like, are you for real? You know, again, look at these batteries. Look how expensive they are. We're, you know, this is ridiculous. They're tearing up the roads, and you know, these renewables don't work. And again, true as that all may be, that doesn't help push the narrative forward. But again, it's an understandable reaction because, again, there has been a paradigm shift, and you have to respond. So I think getting to your question of how do you do this tactfully? How do you do this in a sustainable manner? it comes back to something you and I have talked about many times, and we talked about a couple minutes ago too, which is, you know, what's the common ground? And again, this is cliche. I recognize the industry we're in. I recognize the enemies of the industry, but, you know, can you articulate what everybody who's rational should be after? And that is prosperity. That is, again, recognizing our realizing our full potential. You know, that is, you know, a healthy world, healthy people, healthy planet. We all want those same things. But if we only spend, you know, half a second there, and then immediately we start gravitating towards the, you know, the nitty gritty arguments about batteries and renewables and how there's thousands of, you know, products that are made with oil and gas, all of which are true, you know, the conversation's done. Because again, as we said a couple minutes ago, now you're gravitating towards talking points. So what you need to do is I think what you just described yourself doing is, you know, going into an organization and building that understanding and connecting all of these things together so that you can have a fruitful conversation. And if we want to bring it back to the Shale Insight Conference, that's a great forum for that because it does cover all kinds of different types of topics. So there's technology topics, there's the government affairs topics, there's advocacy topics, and you have a mixture of audiences there, and they can pop into all of these breakout sessions that are, you know, occurring, you know, sometimes they're overlapping. So somebody in legal can pop into a conversation that's largely technical, and somebody that's largely technical can pop into a conversation about legislation. And that builds that understanding, Jason, that, like, you know, you said, can kind of devolve if people are in their own silos, right? You know, whether it's a generational silo in some cases, or, you know, more significantly, a departmental silo, or, you know, some sort of, hey, you know, this is my lane, so to speak, and this is my wheelhouse, and I'm in legal, and do I really need to worry about, you know, the latest and greatest developments from, you know, completion standpoint? So having opportunities, not just big conferences, but internally to connect the dots and build that understanding so that you can solve some of the problems that you just described, you know, yourself trying to solve, that's the holy grail, Jason. And internally to companies, and I guess bringing this back to what I do on a regular basis, you know, I enjoy weaving together advocacy matters and technical matters and things that I got to experience in my world, again, you know, for 15 years on the, you know, the more traditional oil and gas side, you know, in largely technical roles, leading teams, building teams. I get to take that experience. And now when I work with leaders, help them communicate in a way that, you know, demonstrates a deeper understanding so that even if they're, you know, going through a challenging conversation with an employee potentially, well, now they can do it, you know, leveraging the, you know, our industry's, I don't know, our industry's specific challenges, not just going through a some sort of checklist of things they need to say or do or questions to ask to help a troublesome employee or an employee who's frustrated. No, they can do it in a way that says, hey, look, you know, I recognize that you're having issues with these other groups, or if you're on the service side of things, hey, I recognize that, you know, you're having some frustrations with one of our customers, and they can demonstrate that level of understanding that can be a bridge towards some sustainable solution instead of just, all right, you know, we're super busy here. Let me just try to get this person happy and moving on with life. So, I mean, I weave together a lot of things there, but bringing it back to some of the macro issues that you just described in the paradigm shifts and coming all the way back to individual managers, individual leaders, individual employees who, you know, aren't, we're not working in a generic industry here, Jason. And I say that quite a bit, but if you don't have a deeper understanding of all the different elements of it, then again, you're not going to come up with a sustainable solution to some internal, you know, leadership or management problem.
I'm glad you brought up that generic industry, because that's where I was going next. I was going to kind of argue we are a generic industry now, but in a different way. So I wasn't going to use the word generic, but I thought, ooh, this is good, because now Joe and I can have a little bit of a conversation that is going to be back and forth instead of one way. Because a lot of times when you're listening to podcasts and you're listening to people that are in the same industry, it's a one-way conversation. But what I believe is happening in the oil and gas industry is the same thing that happened in the communications business. Because remember, I don't come from oil and gas. I come from media. I've been in the media since I was 10 years old. And I got into oil and gas 13 years ago. So I'm now a veteran in oil and gas, but oil and gas media. So what ended up happening is newspapers are no longer newspapers. Radio stations are no longer radio stations. Television companies are no longer television companies. Everybody is a media company, a content creator, if you will. And by the way, Joe Sinnott and Jason Spies are content creators, and we are in competition with the newspaper at the end of the day. Because if you're a content creator, in order to be sustainable, you have to have revenue coming in. So where does your revenue come in for? Well, in a lot of cases, it's the business that pays for it. So their content creation is more of a department that ends up, you know, being marketing, public relations, maybe business development in some cases. But in the media, that's still your core business. Is you still got to go out and you got to get advertisers, you got to get people to pay for content because there's paid content. Now people are selling their information to Google and Facebook and, you know, data sharing, that sort of thing. I do want to mention, just so people know, the Crude Life and all of the properties that Jason Spies is a part of, we never sell any of our information to anyone. Never have, never will. And I can guarantee that. So as far as I'm concerned, I'll never agree to. And that includes the authorities. So if you're a policeman listening and you want somebody's personal information and you come with me at the FBI, unless you got a warrant, it ain't happening. I believe in the Constitution. Okay. All right. Just had to throw that in there. And Constitution's kind of a dirty word these days. Anyways, see how I just kind of rambled, Joe?
So hey, again, as you said earlier, that's the beauty of a podcast conversation, Jason, is who who knows where it's going to flow next, right?
Yeah. So anyway, where I'm going with this is that, you know, everybody who has a phone essentially is a media company, is a content creator. So although the New York Times has an established audience and, you know, your local radio station has an established distribution audience, I have an established distribution audience that I've grown over the past 13 years. And our model, we partner with other media because we know each other's weak spots, so we can really accentuate them and turn them into positives. And the new generation of people do not understand that pedigree. So that's one advantage that media people have over, say, new media podcasters. My point is, Joe, that I believe this is happening in oil and gas and in energy, that there are no more oil and gas companies anymore. There's no more hydrogen companies anymore. There's no more coal companies anymore. Everyone is an energy company. And I would even go a step further. This time next year, I think they're going to be energy and ag companies that also manage carbon. Two questions for you, Joe. Number one, your thoughts on, is there an oil company left, or are they all energy companies now? And part two, do you see where they're going to fold in carbon management as part of their revenue in the near future, if not now? Was there any carbon talk at your conference?
Oh, well, on the carbon piece, the short answer is yes. Lots of carbon talk, lots of carbon, or at least one, if not two, you know, carbon related breakout sessions where you can learn about the. I mean, it's fun, right? I mean, it's probably one of the sexiest things out there, right? Carbon, this carbon capture, carbon storage. Are we, you know, we're going to be, you know, moving stuff by pipeline? How does it all, you know, it is a hot topic and it's constantly changing, which is why a lot of people, you know, at a conference like Shell Insight are going to show up to hear what the latest and greatest developments are. So the short answer is absolutely. And, you know, again, the word carbon credits, right? Same thing, right? It's, hey, you know, all the carbon credit market, which, you know, can be a bit dubious at times, or obviously a lot of people, you know, are skeptics of it. So some conversations about that, including one company who is touting, you know, the fact that, hey, you know, we can't just talk about carbon credits. We need to prove it. And, you know, there's definitely technologies. There were some, you know, at least one service provider there, exhibitor there, you know, talking about their efforts to prove that these companies are making investments that actually make a difference when it comes to the environment and what they're saying they're doing, and you know, isn't just a bunch of arm waving, greenwashing, whatever you want to call it. So Well, what started as a short answer to your question turned longer, but yes, lots of carbon conversation. In terms of, you know, is there any true oil and natural gas company or company that's willing to, you know, to put it in their name, I guess, at a very basic level? You know, I don't know that it matters, because internally within these organizations, there are still plenty of leaders and plenty of messaging that recognize that, hey, we're not ashamed of the fact that the, you know, the foundation of anything that is to come is hydrocarbon molecule. You know, even when it comes to hydrogen, right? You know, the most effective, the most, I think, hopeful path to a hydrogen future, if that's something you're shooting for, is still natural gas. So again, whether it's, you know, whether companies will ever fully embrace, or you know, whether a big subset of companies will fully embrace, again, their oil and gas nature, I don't know, Jason, but I don't think it matters, because, you know, the math and the science and the physics point to the fact that all of these other things that we're talking about, and, you know, from an agriculture standpoint, and, you know, from, you know, working with all kinds of entities, you know, when it comes to carbon capture and storage and all this other stuff, at the end of the day, the foundation for that is oil and natural gas. So
do you, do you guys have much ethanol out there?
Not again, coming, you know, just in Indiana, the weekend before, the state of Indiana, not Indiana, Pennsylvania, you know, certainly whatever we have here does not compare to what exists in the Midwest, certainly. So,
well, that's what I thought, you know, because here we have, you know, our carbon is centralized around ethanol, as far as the public mm-hmm. conversation. So we have, so there's three companies, Summit Carbon Solutions, Navigator something, and then Wolf Carbon. Those are the three. Now, the Wolf Carbon is like a 200-mile pipeline. It's very small. Their CEO has come out and said they'll never do eminent domain. The other ones are like 2,200 miles, and they're the ones that are suing everybody, and just everybody that is involved in the media and a landowner and attorneys. It's like Professor Plum in the conservatory with the lead pipe, that all this stuff was decided before they even moved forward on it. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, the one guy actually put hidden cameras on his cows, and they had surveyors coming in digging property, people going in his barn. Like, that's how much entitlement these carbon people thought they had on other people's property. And so that's what's turned this thing into a boondoggle and a big kerfuffle up here. But it's all centered around the ethanol carbon. And the bigger picture, Joe, is that if you take a step back and take a look at what's going on in the oil and gas world, is the oil and gas companies are now energy companies. So right now they're getting their bearings, and they're trying to figure out what is needed going forward in either the crude oil division, the shale oil division, or the natural gas division. And then they're going to go out in the carbon division. They're going to go out in the hydrogen division. They're going to go out in whatever division is available for revenue, because they're a company, and companies have to make money. Otherwise, you slowly wither and die on the vine. And that's where I see a lot of this stuff going, Joe, is that you're going to see it kind of go its own way. The carbon part, though, what it does is it completes what's called a circular economy. So on the ethanol side, you get the subsidies from the government to go plant corn. So the government tells you to go plant corn, you go plant corn, and then you can use your ammonia and your feedstocks. And you see what I mean? You've got your natural mm-hmm. gas products, you have your diesel and your crude oil so that you can use on the farm. And then you go and you transport that to the refinery, you create ethanol. That ethanol carbon then gets pipelined to a carbon storage facility, which then in 7 to 10 years, they can turn and use for enhanced oil recovery. So the beauty part is that if you're one of the owners in the company, you get government subsidies the whole way, and you really don't have a lot of risk in there. But from the beginning carbon to the end carbon, it's a circular economy, and you're using ag and energy along the way. that's what's happening up here in the Midwest, is that they're setting companies up that create the circular economy. That's the new buzzword for country club economy, is circular economy. And so a vertical integration, they called it in the 2000s, I believe, mm-hmm. vertical integration, where Cheetos would also give you the diarrhea medicine at the same time, you know. So right, Cheetos not only owned the patent for diarrhea, they also own the patent of the diarrhea medicine. And so that was the joke behind vertical integration and circular economy. But that's what I kind of see happening in the near future. And again, right or wrong, it doesn't matter. I just see that's what's happening. I do think, though, that the natural gas side of things is the most promising out of all energies going forward, to be honest, Joe, because it is so abundant. It is clean. It can be extrapolated into several different molecules in order to be used in a lot of different ways. And that's where I think if the government wants to spend some research and time, that's where they should really focus on it. Because like I've said for 7 years now, if the government wanted to, they could make fracking so that we banned plastic straws and we banned plastic bags 7 years ago, and we just turned that plastic into super plastic, and everybody could have a pool in their backyard for $500 made out of this super plastic, because that's the stuff that you need, not this cheap stuff. Anyway, so I started rambling. I just wanted your thoughts on, you know, kind of the all the above energy companies. Do you see that going that way in the future, where a lot of the companies right now are, you know, getting their footings once again after the COVID shakeup, the Joe Biden shakeup? That's actually the correct way to put it, the Joe Biden shakeup, because he really did. He depleted our strategic storage. I mean, you can't. Yeah, this is sorry, Joe. Sometimes I get a little triggered, because when I make an observation, sometimes people accuse me of picking on someone, and I'm going, no. It's just an observation, man. I'm just reacting to a behavior. That's all. And, you know, when you're president, when you go from energy independence to you depleted your supply storage, that's a reaction. That's not picking on anybody. That's just flat out making a reaction. So anyway, just your thoughts about the future of oil and gas, what you take away from the Shale Insight Conference with these, you know, these big wigs, so to speak, at the conference. Do you see them getting their footing? Do they have their footing? Are they going to add a hydrogen? Are they going to add a carbon? Talk to me a little bit about, you know, this evolution of the oil and gas industry in the executive boardroom and the management side that you deal with on a regular basis.
Well, you know, you mentioned hydrogen there and, you know, sort of the evolution, where things are going right now, Jason. Over the next couple months, you have a lot of leaders who are waiting with bated breath for some decisions from the government regarding potential hydrogen hubs. So there's, you know, on the order of $8 billion that's going to be doled out for the creation of several hydrogen hubs throughout the country. And, you know, lots of companies that were represented at Shale Insight certainly stand to be involved in a potential hydrogen hub or hubs here in Appalachia. So, you know, I think once those decisions are made, and they are imminent, so I think by the end of the year, it's expected to know who the winners are, so to speak. Anyway, I think that's gonna set in motion some, you know, new investments, right? New changes, new thinking, new, you know, dominoes that will obviously begin to fall once that decision has been made. So, you know, that's on the horizon. So in terms of, you know, do leaders have, you know, have their footing? You know, obviously they have a pulse on the different paths that, you know, they might find themselves going down. I'll say that much.
I love that. A pulse. That's great. I love that.
But, and I guess beyond that, Jason, you know, everything you just described is boiled up in, and again, this can be an overused word at times, but it comes down to innovation. And, you know, recognizing that, yes, you know, natural gas has been in many ways, you know, miraculous, right? The miraculous methane molecule in terms of what it has allowed us to do as a society. And of course, you know, what it's allowed us to do in terms of cleaning up our air, in terms of, you know, what it's done in terms of, you know, carbon footprint reduction. It is amazing. And what was on clear display at Shale Insight is that there's nobody out there who's, you know, resting on their laurels. And that's refreshing. So again, do these leaders have it all figured out? No, of course not. And they'll be the first ones to tell you. But are they, you know, settling for the status quo? You know, that's also a big fat no, which is, again, something as a country, we should all be excited about. Because the facts are, and again, you said, you know, when it comes to reacting to politicians and decisions, you know, let's stick to the facts, right? You know, we don't need opinions. We don't need emotion. We can stick to the facts, whether it's the facts around the Strategic Petroleum Reserve or the facts around natural gas. And the facts are that natural gas is a, again, I'll steal a line from the leader of CNX, one of the other big companies here in the Marcellus, Nick DeJulius, you know, and one of his big items is natural gas is a catalyst fuel. It is not a bridge fuel. It is a catalyst fuel. It is going to spark all kinds of new developments and technological innovations and who knows what else, because we don't know, but it is a catalyst. We have a lot of it here in Pennsylvania, and we'd be foolish to not take full advantage of it.
I'll go a step further, because I've said this for since was it 2013 is when I started saying this. One year in to my kind of my deep dive, or maybe a year. Yeah, it was about a year into being embedded out in the Bakken oil field. And I lived out in an RV for a year out in the Bakken oil field. And I did my show from the RV, and we had a food truck. And so we got to talk to the government people. We talked to the truck drivers. We talked to the servicemen. We talked to the local community people. The sheriff would come by every Friday on the show. He would give his update. We would talk about new policies. The sheriff would ask for help from certain, you know, oil and gas workers. Please slow down in this place because there's a lot of kids in this area. We had a great symbiotic relationship with the Bakken, the crude life did in the early days. And what we found, natural gas is a foundation fuel. It's not a bridge fuel. It's not a transition fuel. It's a foundation fuel. When you take a look at what is powering most of our EV batteries, it's natural gas. When you take a look at where cities are going with their garbage dumps, it's a methane natural gas capture power generation. There's very little things that we can do in this society without producing a gas, a natural gas. Butane, pentane, methane. I love the miraculous methane molecule. I've never heard methane used in a positive way in 10 years. And it should be. There's nothing wrong with methane. It is a natural molecule produced by the earth. And in the city of Fargo, Mike Williams, a crazy Democrat who ran as an independent, who got a giant, giant picture of Greta Thunberg. And down, this is a true story, Joe. This artist in Bismarck wanted to do a giant mural of Greta Thunberg in Bismarck. And a local baker who knew the parents said, sure, you can do it on my bakery and it's in the alley and all this stuff. Oh, it turned into statewide hate. This baker was getting death threats, and all he wanted to do was sell cinnamon buns, man. And he just wanted to be the Dunkin' Donuts, time to make the donuts guy, help out my friend's kid with this giant mural he wants to do. And all of a sudden, he's getting death threats. Well, Mike Williams, this very, very signed Fargo up for the G20 conference or the Bill Gates conference from the UN, within a day got a building in Fargo to bring this giant 30, 50 foot tall mural of Greta Thunberg in downtown Fargo. We don't have any oil and gas stuff in Fargo, but we have a giant mural of Greta Thunberg. Mike Williams is the one that also was progressive enough to get the city dump to power off of methane. And that is a very positive move for oil and gas. And that's why I've always liked Mike, is because I know exactly what I'm getting from Mike. I'm getting this just crazy progressive liberal that'll run as an independent because he doesn't want to be labeled as a crazy independent liberal, even though he is. but his heart's always in the right place. So, Joe, I think natural gas is a foundation for our future. And I think using words like the miraculous methane molecule and those types of things get people thinking in the right way, because there are city dumps starting to understand that methane can power a good portion of their city. And look at this. We have a sustainable solution now, because now we have a place where we can bring our garbage. And as we sort through it, we have a place that can create methane. And then we have a place that we can eventually put the stuff that is not sorted through and decomposed. So I'll challenge you, Joe. I think natural gas is a foundation fuel. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no arguments here. I mean, and again, you know, we're talking a lot about the Shell Insight Conference. Yeah, that's a topic too. One of the breakout sessions that I attended was on renewable natural gas. So, you know, you're talking about all of the sources of natural gas that aren't just, you know, being extracted from under the earth, but, you know, from landfills. And that was, you know, that's a topic. And again, that's, you know, demonstrating our innovative mindset and the evolution of the industry. But again, the biggest thing is, even though, you know, it's all miraculous and it is a foundation and it is a catalyst and whatever word you want to use, in terms of the conversation with those who may be, followers of St. Greta, if you will, you know, the key is to not start with the fact that, hey, you know, this molecule is amazing and, you know, we have a whole heck of a lot of it, so don't worry about it. No, the key is to say, hey, look, so far it's done a lot of things, but we acknowledge that, yeah, there's going to be something else down the road. So for now, let's figure out the best way to make use of our current resources while also looking to the future instead of these false choices between A and B. I think that's the key, Jason, because we could go off on a tangent, you know, as an industry and hammer home this, you know, natural gas is a foundation fuel campaign if we wanted to. And there's plenty of third parties out there that would be happy to sign up these companies to produce such a campaign. But again, we got to just take a step back and say, all right, you know, in what ways might that actually backfire? In what ways might that unwittingly suggest that, you know, we're not willing to innovate? Or we're just going to settle for the status quo for the next two or three generations. That's sort of the subtle, you know, I think, danger that might not be easy to solve, but needs to be recognized so that we don't gravitate towards what we talked about, you know, a while ago now, talking points. Because as soon as something that is insightful and correct and factual turns into a talking point, the other side that you're trying to talk to might very well be inclined to just dismiss everything else you're going to say, which obviously does not lead to a fruitful conversation. So that's the one caveat I would say about something that I am completely in agreement on. That is, again, the not just potential, you know, the proven nature of natural gas, and obviously the long-term potential of that miraculous methane molecule.
Talking points. People are getting very tired of stale talking points. Joe, with that said, what are your three takeaways from the Shale Insight Conference? I mean, talking points from the show. So what are your three takeaways? I was going to try to phrase it with the talking points joke in there with that setup, but then my mind didn't go that fast because, well, I've only had two cups of coffee instead of my usual six at this time. So what would you say your three takeaways are from that conference, this Shale Insight Conference in Erie, Pennsylvania?
Well, the first, let's see, I didn't have a top three ready here, but, you know, the first, I'll give a nod to JB Bendick, who commented on something I shared recently in my own sort of recap of Shale Insight. And, you know, he emphasized the need for action. You know, you can go and you can ingest all of these insights, you can have great conversations, but if there isn't some call to action by somebody who's standing up on stage or in a leadership position or whatever, then this is all for naught. So the first takeaway for me is, hey, you can't just have insights, you need to take action. I'd say the second piece kind of flowing from there is the beauty, the value of in-person networking and human conversations. Nothing tops that. You know, that was a common thread that comes up naturally in conversation about how fruitful 2 days up in Erie with several hundred folks can be. So I think that message for me as a, you know, leadership coach, as an executive coach, is something you need to take back to your, you know, internally within your own companies. And of course, to make sure, hey, you know, are you fostering opportunities for internal networking, internal communication? Because, you know, boy, oh boy, the value of that was on full display. And I think the final piece, Jason, is something we dove into in a lot of detail here. And that is, you know, we need to constantly be asking about our messaging as an industry and whether it's as effective as it could be. Because, you know, I'll admit, when I'm sitting and listening to people talk, you know, especially if it's a one-way keynote or whatever, you know, I'm not there just jotting down insights about the industry because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I may have heard just because I'm, you know, have the opportunity to be involved in the industry and attend other events. But, you know, I'm there making notes about, hey, you know, missed opportunities to reshape that message so that it's not a talking point or make sure that it doesn't come across as generic. And, you know, there's constant room for improvement for people at every, you know, point in their career and at every level of an organization to, you know, take a step back, put themselves in the audience chair and recognize when what they're saying, you know, might be a bit stale or might not be as effective as it could be. So I think as individuals, and again, I do this on a day-to-day basis with individuals, but more significantly as an industry, we need to constantly be asking if our messaging is trending towards generic, trending towards fluff, or if it's to the point, if it's clear, and if it's actually resonating with our intended audience. So those are my three ones here that at least are apparently top of my brain right now, but always happy to continue talking about what we have here in the Marcellus, Jason, and you know, very, very thankful to have been a part of it for the last 15 years or so.
Anyone talking about ESG at the event?
Yeah, although, you know, it's funny, you know, the short answer is yes. You know, all roads lead to ESG. They kind of always had, you know, even before ESG became a thing. But I would say that, and again, this is objective. This is not an opinion. I would say that I heard the letters E, S, and G less this year than in the prior year. And I'd be curious to see where that trend goes. But again, are we talking about environmental, social, and governance related items? Yeah, of course. And no less so than, you know, when the words or the letters ESG were front and center on everybody's lips.
Well, I'm glad you said that because that was my next question was, is it still there, although it's not being used in those words? Because you can still advance a movement or a narrative without using the words. And that's kind of where I see this ESG going. I know Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock, was on record this summer saying that he's going to go away from the term ESG, but they're still going to move the movement ahead type of a thing. So, and you are very astute when it comes to what ESG is, because everything is ESG. That's exactly right. There's, okay, and environmental. Well, you and I put off an environmental footprint with what we eat, when we go to the bathroom, how far we go to work. We also have a social part of our life of whether we drink Bud Light or we don't drink Bud Light. And that, by the way, is on health implications and cultural implications by going to the store and just wanting to buy a soft drink or a beer. And then the governance side, the transparency and the oversight. So it's interesting how the ESG movement has evolved. And anyway, so I appreciate your insight on that, because that's what I'm noticing too, that it's not being uttered as much, but the topics are getting more prominent. So the things that were a concern a few years ago that people would say the words ESG, now they're becoming like breakout specific panels and stuff like that. So it's anyway, so that's been my observation. But what kind of stuff, and I'm kind of looking at the clock as we wind down here, I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about, you know, your business, this executive coaching and some consulting. It is annual meetings. It's a lot of prep time for next year. What are you hearing from the executives that their concerns are leading into next year, that either you're helping or you're picking up on this and you can help with this problem?
Yeah, well, I mean, a generic thread or theme, obviously, you know, can't get into specifics, but I mean, it's the reality, at least here in the Marcellus, that, hey, you know what, we got low natural gas prices right here regionally, but because we've innovated, you know, because we've seen so much evolution in the industry, and, you know, because we've, you know, we're no longer growing for growth's sake, you know, how do you take advantage of the fact that gas prices are actually low? You know, how do you turn that into a positive? And it's refreshing, having been again in this region and seeing the ups and the downs in terms of pricing and activity, it's refreshing now to watch leaders say, all right, now how do we take full advantage of the fact that we have incredibly affordable natural gas in this region? And, you know, that's where the thinking's at, Jason. And, you know, different companies are going to have different approaches about how to take advantage of it instead of just crossing their fingers and hoping for natural gas prices approaching $5. You know, there's not a lot of false hope. There's a lot of, again, action and thinking about how to take full advantage. And in our region, and again, I mean, I'll tout the merits of Appalachia, of course, you know, in our region, there's no reason that we shouldn't take full advantage of these miraculous methane molecules that are below our feet, you know, when it comes to, you know, manufacturing and, you know, the generation of fuels and prosperity and everything else right here in this region. So there's lots of those conversations about, you know, public-private partnerships or partnering with trade organizations to make sure that there is zero value left on the table. And some of that value can be generated by the low cost fuel that we have here. So that's probably one of the biggest, perhaps most refreshing and encouraging threads of conversations and themes that companies will be looking to, you know, manage or put in place over the coming years. Beyond that, you know, in terms of, you know, my role in all of this, you know, a lot of it comes down to articulating, you know, some of that, you know, taking low natural gas prices and avoiding the what everybody's waiting for, say, oh, we're waiting for our doom and gloom message, or we're going to have to cut a bunch of jobs and activity because natural gas prices are low. You know, instead, again, you know, not feeding into what people expect you to say, but, you know, making sure that there is things that are being conveyed that are truly hopeful and that resonate and that aren't easily dismissed. And that's a lot of what I do in my day job, Jason, especially this time of year. I'm not involved as I used to be in the numbers that go into business plans and such, but I am involved in the communication part of that. You know, being a secret weapon for leaders who are trying to articulate their messaging to their peers, to their superiors, to board members, to investors. You know, that's fun. You know, I get to do that now. Again, I got to do it, you know, from a luxurious position of being behind the scenes and not having to deliver that message. But being that secret weapon for leaders, especially this time of year, is a whole lot of fun. And so, you know, that's one of the many things I do from an executive coaching standpoint. But, you know, most of what I do, Jason, is day to day working with individual leaders on whatever is front and center for them. Because as I hope I've made clear, and in this conversation and in all conversations and in, you know, my own, you know, material and everything else, you know, I don't want to be just a generic executive coach, of which there are, you know, countless, right? There's probably millions of coaches out there in the world. My focus is on this industry. And what I love doing is focusing on individuals and what's in front of them at any given moment. And when I say any given moment, I might mean it's something that's, you know, they're going to be walking into 30 minutes after we talk. Because that is a sustainable approach. That's not just cramming talking points or ideas or leadership hacks down people's throats. That's doing it in a way that allows them to take immediate action, to see immediate results, positive or negative, and then to follow up with me and come up with perhaps a tweaked game plan that they can implement and put in place going forward. I love doing that on a day-to-day basis. I love doing it, you know, this time of year when, again, the stakes can be a little bit higher when it comes to decisions and communication. And, you know, I love chatting with anybody in the industry that's interested in understanding more about how that actually makes a difference to the bottom line of organizations. And Jason, I can go on for a long time there. Looked like you were on mute there for a second, but
I was trying to put in my passcode to get the mute off, because I a lot of times I'll put mute on, you know, just so that you don't hear me cough or anything like that. But how can people get in touch, and what do we have next steps if people want to give you some business going in? By the way, are you filling up your dates for next year?
Yeah, still, looking? Openings on, in terms of, you know, events and speaking, there's flexibility there for 2024. As far as my day job, you know, fortunately, you know, all signs point to being, you know, pretty busy here heading into 2024, but because of the ebb and flow of how I work, where there's a lot of times a pretty big push early on, you know, 6 to 12 months, and then, you know, moving into maintenance mode, there is that steady churn, just like in natural gas development there, where, you know, always looking to add on, you know, new clients, new conversations who are looking to, again, take advantage of the, you know, the things that we just talked about there. So, yeah, always happy to have those conversations. I'd say the easiest way, of course, is head on over to the internet. You can Google or go to wittingpartners.com. That's W-I-T-T-I-N-G partners. Always happy to connect on LinkedIn as well. And then I guess the final source of maybe information or at least a flavor of what my energy-focused leadership development services offer is via the Energy Detox. So it's a podcast, there's a video component too, so you can find it on YouTube, any podcast platform, but also on the internet if you're interested in some of the extra resources and transcripts and anything else that might be helpful. And you can do that again. You can Google the Energy Detox, you can go to theenergydetox.com, or again, find it on whatever your favorite media platform happens to be.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Mr. Joe Sinnott. Anything in closing?
Well, I guess in closing, after, you know, you and I have spent plenty of time talking about the merits, the value, the enjoyment of Shale Insight, is that, you know, if you're looking for something to do in late September of 2024, head on over to Erie, Pennsylvania. It's a tremendous event. It's a tremendous setting. It's a tremendous part of the world here, if you're not familiar with Western Pennsylvania. And, you know, for those who are, again, part of the Marcellus or want to be a part of the Marcellus, you know, check out the Marcellus Shale Coalition, who puts on the Shale Insight Conference. It's a phenomenal organization. I'm happy and proud and privileged to be a part of it. And again, anything that helps continue the conversation and injects new thinking, new ideas, new perspectives is more than welcome, not just from an enjoyment standpoint, but because it's consistent with the innovative nature of everybody who takes part in the Marcellus.
The Crude Life would like to welcome and invite each and every one of you to the Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 7th and 8th, 2024. Oil, gas, wind, solar, uranium, Bitcoin, sustainable solutions, and much, much more at this year's Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, February 7th and 8th. Folks, you don't want to miss the Crude Life Podcast Pool Party happening February 7th. It's the week before the Super Bowl, folks. The Energy Exposition, the Crude Life is all in 2024. For more information, check out energyexposition.com.